Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. I'm so honored to have our dear friend Megan Scheer on the podcast. Not only have I known her throughout the years, but I understand and have seen how she's helped so many people. And she's honestly one of the sweetest people I know. And I know you're going to get so much value out of listening to what she has to share. Now, she is a holistic therapist and a relationship coach, which we go into our own relationship on this podcast as well. A speaker, author, and facilitator with over 11 years of experience leading women back to their most authentic self. She is the creator of the Love Alignment Method and the Self-Care Space Therapy Platform and has helped thousands of women create transformation in their lives and relationships. Megan is an expert in all things healing with training and certifications in somatic trauma therapy, hypnotherapy, life coaching, nervous system regulation, yoga, meditation, and Parkes Work Therapy. She is now the author of a new book called Choose Yourself, and it is currently out and available. Something that we're going to dive into, but so much more, and I'm excited for you to take a listen. Megan, thank you so much for taking some time and being with us today. We go back some years now, and seeing you transform and what you've done and now writing a beautiful book, like, it's so cool to be able to witness your journey even from afar. So thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here and excited for this conversation.
So through your whole journey, what inspired you to write the book, Choose Yourself? And who were you writing this for?
In a lot of ways, to be honest, I was writing it for my younger self. Like, this journey really is one that kicked off with my own personal healing. I didn't start my career in the realm of attachment trauma and the work that I do now. I actually started it more in the realm of eating disorder recovery and eating psychology and nutrition, which is, I think, how we originally connected, Jen, when we were kind of more, when I was in the wellness space. And pretty early on, I was experiencing a lot of struggles in the realm of relationships. I went through some really unhealthy relationships in my early to mid 20s and just kind of found myself asking this question of, like, why does this keep happening? Why do I keep attracting this type of person? Or why do I keep choosing to pursue this type of person? And as a byproduct of kind of going through therapy myself and exploring my own attachment patterns, I then just started to have people flocking to me, like asking the same questions, and people were coming to me looking for support in the realm of relationships. And so much of our struggles, even if we're talking about something like eating disorder recovery, a lot of it goes back to attachment wounding in childhood and relational ruptures. So I just started getting really fascinated about that connection, the correlation between how we learn to bond and connect and attach to other people, and then the ways where we kind of get stuck in unhealthy patterns or patterns that aren't really serving us. And in my own kind of healing journey through that time, I decided to spend a period of time intentionally single, where I took dating off the table for a little bit to really get clear on, like, who am I? What do I want? Where is my relationship with myself in all of this? And that just so happened to be a lot of the work that I was doing with clients over the years as well. And that is what inspired the theme of this book, is really having messaging out there that made it be okay to spend time on your own, to focus on your relationship with yourself. That's not something that was ever modeled for me growing up. I feel like there's so much pressure, especially for girls and women, to just, like, check all the right boxes at the right time, to find the one, to get married, to do the things that we're supposed to do on a very specific timeline. And there can be a sense that, like, something's wrong with you if you haven't checked those boxes at that precise timing. So the idea of Choose Yourself is really getting to, like, take back your relationship with yourself, but also the timing of your life, and learning to trust the timing of your life.
That is so incredibly important. And I feel like a lot of people listening could probably relate.
I think of so many people in my own life, or even me, of what the expectation was and what I thought was going to happen. And, you know, the timeline of the stories we make up in our head based on what we've seen and what we've been told, or movies. And it's interesting and hard to be able to release that expectation and really own something different. And I think that's probably the trap that I see a lot of people get into. It is, like you said, you know, going to the next, to the next, to the next, and not taking that time to sit back and reflect of like, wait, is this, you know, what I need, and who am I, and what am I, you know, searching for and stuff. And so it's so interesting to be able to have this conversation and that allowance for men and women, but I see it a lot in women in my experience, you know? And so being able to have this conversation, I think, is so important.
Pausing quick from the episode to talk about an aspect of our health that not enough of us pay close enough attention to, and that is our hydration. I'm not just talking about drinking enough water, though. I'm talking about refueling and replenishing the electrolytes that we're losing throughout the day without even knowing it. That is why Jen and I use Element electrolyte drink packets every single day to make sure we're replacing the electrolytes that we're losing. The sodium, magnesium, and potassium found in Element is so important in many of our body's physiologic processes. They can help with things like brain fog, fatigue, mental clarity, bowel movements, sleep, muscle cramps, and so much more. And on top of all these amazing benefits, Element is just delicious, and that is why you should go down to the link in the show notes, because you get a free sample pack with every single order that gives you all of the flavors so you can test them out and know which one you want to get when you inevitably come back to get more. Start really hydrating yourself today. Go down to the link in the show notes. It's just drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelement, spelled out LMNT.com/optimal, and get your free gift today. All right, let's get back into the episode.
Now, I want to dive right in on therapy, because a lot of what we talk about, I feel like, are going to have aspects of going to a therapist and talking with a therapist and getting to know things that, you know, you've gone through in your past and trying to change what you really want within your future, right? But I also know that you say that it's not usually enough. Now, why is that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I love therapy. I'm a big advocate for, and when I say therapy, I mean traditional talk therapy. Like, what most people think of when they think of therapy is psychotherapy, where you show up, you know, maybe once a week or so, and you talk about what's going on in your life. And like you said, maybe you identify some patterns and why things are the way they are. Maybe you get better at talking about your feelings. And then most people inevitably hit a point where they feel like they're just showing up and venting each week. Like, I'm talking about all this stuff, but nothing's really changing. And I just then am focused on what's not working in my life. And that doesn't feel very good. And there are phenomenal talk therapists out there. So again, it's an incredible modality. But most people need more than that, especially if you have any history of trauma or attachment wounding. As you guys know, you work so intimately with the body. Our body is really what is holding on to those trauma memories. Our body is where the emotions are felt and experienced. So we can intellectually process and talk about our feelings all day long and have nothing actually change if we're not understanding the somatic component and understanding our nervous system and what's going on in our nervous system when we're experiencing attachment issues or attachment patterns. So there are tons of wonderful modalities that get the body online or incorporate the body into the conversation as well. Everything from somatic therapy and somatic experiencing to EMDR, even hypnotherapy, which involves working more with the subconscious, but that's kind of an extension of the body, and parts work. Like, these are all really great therapeutic modalities that can help us go beyond just that level of awareness and into the realm of actually creating change, because that's what most of us want. When you find yourself in those patterns where you're like, oh, I always get really defensive when I'm in conflict with my partner, or I get really shut down and I feel like I can't talk when something hard happens or when there's a disagreement. And I don't want to be doing that, but it's like my body's just having that reaction. How do I actually change that? Because it's not enough to just be aware of it. The relationship's not going to get better if I just see what's happening but can't change it. So that's really why I like to encourage people to begin to explore modalities beyond just traditional talk therapy or CBT, and to work with practitioners who really support this like whole person approach.
I think that's great. And like you said, I mean, I've done talk therapy myself, and I could definitely agree with that. With once you talk with the same therapist enough, you feel like you are just kind of start to get into this cycle where there's not much else. Like, you just start talking about the same stuff over and over again, and it becomes more of an echo chamber than anything. But So when we start talking about identifying and discovering the true self, and doing some of this deeper work, especially with somebody who may have gone through some significant traumas, how do you understand what is your true self and what might be the lies or the traumas creeping back in, or the beliefs that you've held from things other people have said?
I love this question so much, because I think a lot of us are living in a way that's really disconnected from that true self, or in the realm of somatic parts work, which is a modality, one of the main modalities I work with. I refer to it as the core self, but you can think of it as like, yeah, that most authentic version of you. And what happens for people who experience trauma, but also for all of us, this isn't just talking about big T trauma. It's not just like abuse or neglect or natural disasters and really hard things that happen. It's also the cumulative effect of smaller things that happen or our needs not being met. And that can be in your childhood household, like having parents who were just really busy or distracted and didn't have a lot of time for you or weren't necessarily emotionally available, or maybe feeling like you didn't fit in at school, or being the kid who had to move around a lot. Like, that can be really hard as well. And so what happens in those instances is we have these parts, these sort of like sub aspects of our psyche, our personality, that develop to essentially implement like strategies, coping mechanisms to deal with those imperfect circumstances. And we learn to sort of relate to those parts as ourselves. So like you said, the limiting beliefs. Maybe when you were younger, it just felt like nobody really listened to you. You had the distracted, busy parents, and maybe you didn't fit in well at school. And so there's this belief of like, I don't really matter. And things go better for me when I pretend to like what other people like, when I put on a mask, when I people please, then I feel like I get my needs met a little bit more. So we carry that belief with us. We have that part who's trying to protect us from the pain of not feeling understood or seen or loved. But really then we're disconnecting from our authentic self. And so that strategy might have worked in childhood, like that part really helped us navigate that circumstance. But then it doesn't help when we're an adult who's trying to build a close, intimate, vulnerable relationship with somebody, and we can't show them that authenticity. We can't show them who we really are because we've lost contact with that part of ourselves. And so a lot of this work is essentially learning to build a relationship with all those younger parts and being that loving presence, maybe that like loving adult parent type presence that that younger part always needed. And so when we think of like the core self or the true self, that's the version of us who's able to have compassion towards those younger parts, the part that's able to be curious about how those parts feel, that's able to have a sense of like groundedness and act in integrity and alignment with our core values, the part of us who doesn't self-sabotage. That's the part that we want to strengthen and develop more, as opposed to what most of us are used to doing, which is having kind of that harsh inner critic relationship. Maybe we're judgmental of those parts of like, oh, this, there's something wrong with me. I need to fix it. I need to make it go away. And in the realm of what we're talking about here, parts work, we would call that another part, like the judgmental part, the controlling part, the perfectionistic part who just wants us to appear perfect all the time and get it right all the time so that we'll be loved. We need to build a relationship with that part too and get curious about like, why do I think I have to be perfect all the time? Why am I so harsh on myself? And the more we do that, the more consistently we show up with this more compassionate, loving inner presence, the more we experience this integrated sense of wholeness. And the more we realize like, oh, we're all just human here. We're all going to have parts that
we feel some shame or embarrassment about. And part of building healthy relationships is sort of taking ownership of those parts and being able to share them with the people who we trust and who care about us.
And I mean, I love the way that you're stating it and talking about it. And I think, you know, it could be hard. Like, how do we start to identify, well, what are my core values? Maybe I've been taught or believed something, or I've had manipulative parents that maybe didn't think that they were in a certain way, but I've developed patterns. And or like for me, I feel like I was in a relationship where I was never enough and I was always striving to have to be more and told that I would never get the other thing outside of this relationship. So I might as well try to stay in this one because I believe that that's what I'm, and my authentic self, my core value started to just kind of get pushed aside because it was like, well, that's okay. I can accept something different. And, but that was, and getting out of that, I was able to start to adopt out of that and get back to my core values and get back to who I am. But that was only one relationship. Like, I can't imagine someone being raised in that state of manipulation and deception and not true love, you know, and allowed to discover your own core value. So how can someone start to say, it's okay for me to feel something different, think something different, want something different? And what does that, like, how do I start to develop that within me?
You know what I want to really acknowledge first is whether that happens in the context of like the example you gave of an adult romantic relationship that was not a healthy one where you lost your sense of self, or whether that happened in childhood and was just sort of like the water you were swimming in. Like, that's all you knew until you get to the point in adulthood where maybe you can ask those questions for yourself of like, whoa, wait a minute, what do I want separate from my parents or the community or family or religion or whatever it is I grew up in. The first thing to acknowledge is that there's going to be a lot of grief to navigate there. And I think that that's where most people find resistance in even being able to ask the questions, because asking the question, what do I want, comes with the acknowledgement of the fact that I didn't get to have my own preferences or opinions. I didn't get to have my own sense of identity. I just had who I needed to be, the role I needed to play in order to fit in and be loved and accepted in that environment. And wow, there's a lot of pain in that acknowledgement. Like, that's heavy to carry, the fact that maybe I didn't have the parents that I should have had. I didn't have the love I should have had or the community that I would have liked to have had. That's something that is not going to be an easy fix. And if we can acknowledge that there will be grief woven in with the self-discovery and with the moments of liberation and empowerment and joy in discovering who you are, I think it can take some of the burden off of feeling like you're doing it wrong. I see that in a lot of the clients I'm working with. They're like, this, I feel like I'm doing it wrong because like, it doesn't feel good. I'm feeling pain. I'm feeling sadness about the fact that I have to acknowledge that I didn't get to have these needs met growing up. So I think that's probably the first place to start. And the same thing would be true coming out of an unhealthy relationship in adulthood, acknowledging the grief and the fact that like, in order for this person to accept me, I had to lose who I was. Like, they didn't love the real me. I had just had to wear a mask all the time to be who they wanted me to be. Like, ah, that hurts, right? And then we can go back to, in the acknowledgement of that pain and grief, what else is there? There's an opportunity to get more clarity about what I would like my relationships to look like and who the version of me who I want to bring into them. Like, if I want to be my truest, most authentic self in a relationship, what has to be true in that relationship? What shared values must there be? Like, honesty and communication and trust. And that's something that can feel, like I said, liberating and empowering when you're coming off of an experience in childhood or adult relationships of not getting to be your real self and not feeling a sense of belonging and authenticity at the same time.
Sorry, I just want to follow that up because I think the narrative, you know, you allowed my experience, thank you, for to be okay and woven into that as well. And what I heard from so many when I was sharing my experience is still this belief wrapped up in well, if they cheated on you or they did something to you, it's what did you do wrong? Mm-hmm. What, like, you know, where it's like, well, can't that be like my value is that I would never do that. So it's okay. So for me to also find someone who would never do that as well. And their choices don't have to be my fault. So mm-hmm. how does someone, you know, start to break that pattern of like understanding that and getting back, you know, releasing that pressure? Because I think that's still such a common societal concern is that, well, if they cheated or they did something wrong, it's because you did something wrong.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I think that is where the lines get really blurry between self-accountability and the acknowledgement that other people's actions are always just a state, a reflection of their state of consciousness. So yes, when we leave a relationship, it's always great to ask the question of like, what could I have done differently? How would I like to have shown up differently? And in a situation like that, the answer is usually that like, oh, I wasn't showing up as my authentic self. Like I was self-abandoning to make that relationship work. And so what I could have done differently was probably leave sooner. And what they did, you know, if we're talking about betrayal, trauma, or like infidelity or dishonesty, the partner who is the one taking those actions always has the burden of responsibility for their actions and the burden of responsibility for communicating, like if there was unhappiness in the relationship, if they feel like their needs weren't getting met. Like those are things that should have happened, steps that always should be taken before the betrayal happens, before the betrayal occurs. And so sort of like victim shaming or blaming and being like, well, what did you do wrong? Feels so disempowering because it perpetuates that story of like, you're not enough, which is the story that people in those types of relationships are already carrying. We don't need somebody to tell us that because we're already feeling that way. What needs to happen is for us to build our sense of self-worth to the point where we can say, oh, I know that this behavior is not a reflection of what I really want. And so in this instance, choosing myself means walking away from somebody who's not a match for what I want, who can't give me what I want. And to know that even if in their mind, I wasn't enough for them, they still should have communicated their unhappiness or discontent in the relationship before it got to that point. So yeah, I think there's always like that room for self-accountability, but not blaming self for the actions of another.
That's a great way to put it.
This is interesting because I'm just sitting here smiling because I'm thinking back on my own journey. I'm thinking about how Jen and I met. And I've never, like I've done traditional talk therapy, but I've never done any like guided somatic type therapies. And I look at my history. I'm going to try to tell a very quick story without dragging it on too long, but I got caught in that story of I'm from the Midwest. Like I just needed to find the nice girl who matched me, who had the family that looked like mine and be married and we'd be happy and it'd be great. And I dated a lot of really great, great young women. And I was always sitting there in the relationship like, why the hell isn't this working? Why the hell don't I feel this? Why the hell don't I feel this match? And I would consider myself someone who to that point in my life had no big T traumas, very few, like very supportive parents and family, a lot of expectations, you know, maybe that played into things. But then as I continued to go down this route, I had some, what I would call self-inflicted little T and big T traumas that got me to the point where I just needed to figure this out. And I remember doing my own kind of self-guided somatic deep dive with some pretty intense breath work and music. And I just specifically meditated on this relationship I was in. And I like broke down crying and just, I get full body chills right now talking about it because I had a real like out of body experience. And that was the start of my own self-development journey where I'm like, okay, I need to be out of this relationship. And I need to stick true to my values. And my brother told me, he's just like, everyone you consider dating, just lay it all out right out front. And if it scares them away, good riddance. And I met Jen.
And we both did that to each other.
Night number one, like night number one that we met and danced and talked until 2 a.m. We we touched on every single core value, and it was like, and we were both still in like a healing, developing place on our own journey, but it was like, it matched, and I moved to California 3 months later, you know, and that's my story.
I love that.
Do whatever you want with that.
Oh, I love hearing that so much, because I've only ever known like Jen's side of like leading up to you guys meeting and what she had been through prior to that. And it makes so much sense to me that you had just gone into this deep heart opening and this deep reflection of like, what do I really want? Why have these relationships that on paper should have worked, like should have checked all the boxes,
they were great.
Why weren't they feeling quite right? You created the space to ask yourself, like, what is it that I really want? And Jen was going through her own healing at the time. And like, of course, you guys met at the perfect moment in your life. I love stories like this so much, because it's just such a reflection of like, we meet the people we're meant to meet in the timing we're meant to meet them. If you had each met each other 5 years earlier, like it maybe wouldn't have worked. Yeah. And that just kind of validates, like, I'm sure it was really uncomfortable for you to go into that deep cathartic place where you were asking the big questions and doing that work, but also like, look where it led you.
Absolutely. And yeah. And what you were, some of the things you said previously, it just made me think like, the relationships looked like they should have been great and they were comfortable. And the woman I was with was like a good person. But I truly was like turning a blind eye to my true self, who knew, mm-hmm. who knew from the beginning, like, this isn't the person that I'm going to marry.
Yeah.
But it just, it was comfortable and it looked right and we had fun. And so I stayed in these relationships way too long.
And that, honestly, I think that's the camp that most people fall into. Like, yeah. As somebody who does somatic trauma therapy, I work with a lot of people with an explicit trauma history and people who are ending up in really unhealthy relationship patterns as a result of maybe unhealthy childhood dynamics and like have that to sort sift through. But I feel like the majority of people are the people who, like you acknowledged, maybe haven't had big T trauma, but just have had those expectations of like, this is what life is supposed to look like. And so why would I give up a relationship with a good person, like a decent person who helps me check those boxes that I'm supposed to check and do the things I'm supposed to do, even though there's this core part of me that knows this isn't the right thing? And I think a lot of people get into relationships for the wrong reasons and stay in them longer than they should, because there's that fear of like, what if it doesn't get better than this? What if I don't meet somebody? I just am supposed to settle down. I'm supposed to get married and have kids. And that willingness to trust that core self that says like, this isn't quite it. There's something more true out there for you. And you might have to spend some time alone and be willing to be in solitude in your relationship with self for a while in order to get there. That's a brave thing. It's a hard choice for most people to make when we're sort of pressured into these societal norms. So I'm glad you shared your story, because I feel like that's one that a lot of people can relate to.
And I want to go back. You've mentioned attachment quite a few times now. And so really understanding like, what does attachment wounds mean? And then how does someone start to discover kind of like what their different attachment style may be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kind of basics of attachment is understanding how our early relationships, like our earliest relationships with our parents and primary caregivers, and it's usually our parents, but that could also include like grandparents or whoever raised you, how that sort of wires our brain and nervous system to learn what we need to do, who we need to be in order to maintain attachment, maintain connection with people, and how that translates to our adult relationships, primarily romantic relationships, because those childhood attachment bonds light up the same part of our brains as our romantic relationships. But we can see it play out in friendships as well. Like, you might notice some of the same feelings and tendencies, just not to as great a degree, not with as much emotional charge, but just some like tangible examples. So the main attachment styles are anxious, avoidant, disorganized, and secure. And secure is sort of like the baseline that we're all going for. That's when you feel both confident in your ability to be on your own, and you also feel comfortable in intimacy and vulnerability and in relationship with people. Anxious attachment can show up when there, let's say, were really distant caregivers, and there was a sense of like you had to earn love, like you had to work to perform for it or achieve or earn the love that was available to you in your household. So there might be a sense of really needing to like always reach for it, go after it, to have validation that people care about you, that they're there. Avoidant tendencies can often show up. And these are just some examples. There's so many different ways that these patterns can develop. But let's say like you had enmeshment in your household, or like a helicopter parent and a parent who was like really, overly attached to you, that can then sometimes cause you to feel like, but like intimacy isn't safe. It's too much. It's like kind of suffocating. And so when people get too close, you get guarded, you shut down, you push them away. Maybe there's emotional unavailability there. Disorganized attachment is when there's sort of a blend of the two. So it's sort of the hallmark, like, I want love, but then I push it away. Like, come close. Wait, no, that's too close. And something that I think is really important to understand when we're talking about attachment is that in the realm of like pop psychology right now, in this day and age of social media, it's easy to read about these things and then to just sort of like label yourself like, oh, I'm anxiously attached or I'm avoidant. And I think it's so important to get away from attaching or affixing these labels like it's a diagnosis, because then we just sort of feel like it's something we live with and manage, when the goal is actually to understand how these attachment patterns are showing up in the nervous system and in our unconscious beliefs so that we can rewire them, because we have the ability to do so. Like, we have very malleable plastic brains and nervous systems. We can create new patterns in relationships, and we can have what's called earned secure attachment. We can move towards secure attachment no matter where you fall on the spectrum, so that you can get to the place where you're able to have hard conversations, you're able to build healthy intimacy, you're also able to be on your own and not need to seek a relationship for your sense of worth and validation. So I think that's really important for people to know, that you're not like doomed with whatever attachment style or attachment patterns that you resonate with, that it's something that can change over time.
So when it comes to somatic therapy for someone to try and start to, you know, dive in a little bit more, I feel like the unfortunate reality is you either find yourself in one of two places, or many people will. You're either in a place like Los Angeles or New York, where there's probably like an abundance, probably too many somatic therapists of all different types, or you're somewhere like where I grew up in rural Minnesota, that you've never heard of this type of woo-woo magic, and you don't know how to find a provider even if you wanted to. Like, in those two scenarios, I mean, really the question is, how do you find the right somatic therapist that's a good fit for you?
It is hard. I for sure will acknowledge that, especially if you live in more rural places where these conversations aren't even the norm. You might not even know what to look for, like which of the modalities that we've been talking about is the right one. So I think that the best thing to do is first just a little bit of research to understand what modality resonates most with you. So like I mentioned EMDR early on, that's a really great modality when you do have a trauma history that you haven't really processed yet or unpacked. It can really help you. It helps your brain change the way you relate to those traumas. I've mentioned somatic parts work. There's also IFS, or internal family systems, and it's similar to parts work. There's a lot of traditional therapists out there who are also trained in IFS. So that can be an easier sort of entry point if you're just trying to find like a therapist who takes your insurance. You're probably going to be more likely to find an IFS trained therapist than you would some of these other more like holistic somatic modalities. So that could be a great place to start. And it's honestly kind of like dating. Like, you might not mesh with the first person or even couple of people that you work with. So giving yourself permission to like do an intro session, to a couple of sessions with somebody, and feel into, do I feel safe with them? Like, do I feel safe truly being vulnerable and going to vulnerable places and working on some potentially uncomfortable, painful, confronting experiences with this person? And if the answer is no, you can walk away. You don't have to work with somebody who you don't feel that sense of safety and trust with. And last thing I'll say is there, you know, kind of one benefit of the way things have been shifting in recent years is the virtual nature of this work. So even something like somatic therapy, where we're working with the body, you don't necessarily have to be in person with somebody to do that work, which is really great. If you have a trained professional who knows how to cue you through whatever practices or modalities you're working with, that can be done virtually. So that's really helpful too, if you live somewhere where there's nobody in person to do this work with. You can maybe find somebody in the closest big city or even in another state, depending on the type of licensure requirements.
Actually saw a practitioner, the somatic practitioner, virtually after my miscarriage. And she herself had had miscarriage, so I felt really safe being with her. But she, I mean, we checked in with the body. We checked in with where, you know, things felt and different things within the session. And so everything that you're saying kind of validates, like, you know, my own shared experience with, you know, directly having that.
And I love that you found somebody who knew what it was like to go through what you were experiencing. I feel like that can be so important as well when you're doing your research to find a practitioner. That sense of, can I trust this person and feel safe with them, is often amplified if you know that they really get what you're going through. Like, they've been through something similar and they have felt what you are feeling. There's so much like healing power in that sense of witnessing and being held by somebody who's been where you are.
And I think that process that you brought up of interviewing and really like taking it as speed dating providers, like, that's what you should do for everyone you hire for anything.
Yes.
for that matter, like whether it's PT. Your doctor, your OBGYN, yes. Your PT, your therapist. I did that with my therapist. I called 4 different ones. And I would say, like, press them to do a quick phone consult. Like, some people will not want to do free phone consultations or things like that. But I think that's a cop-out to get you to pay for your first session, which it is in a sense. But, like, if they're not willing to give you that 10 minutes on the phone just to feel like if you can even connect with them, then they're probably not a good fit anyway, if they're not willing to give you that little bit of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even in 10, 15 minutes, you can feel into like that sense of safety and trust and commonality with them. You can ask them even about like, what modalities do you use and how do you work with people? Yeah, you're so right. Even thinking about that with physical therapists, I've been through a lot of PT myself, and I'm like, I've definitely worked with PTs who do not understand my body. I have hypermobility, and like, they just don't know how to work with that. And then you get one who does, and you're like, I feel so seen. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I want to, you know, help people who might be listening, who have experienced trauma or know that they have been through things, but haven't really explored within the body and how that relates to the entire nervous system. Are there things that people can do now that start to introduce them into what they might be feeling in the body, or how to even start to step into this? Like, can you recommend some things?
Yeah, totally. And I think acknowledging that a lot of people can have a lot of fear about intentionally going into the body if you've had a history of trauma or even like chronic pain or chronic illness, your body has been a not safe place to be, like sensations that have felt painful or overwhelming, of course, it's going to feel really daunting to begin to build a relationship with the body. So starting slow, I think sometimes when people learn about somatic work, they can learn the really cathartic, big breathwork practices or like big movement, shaking, like really big tools and modalities. And that can understandably feel maybe like a little too much for your system. And for most people starting out, it is. The real somatic work begins on a much more subtle, nuanced level. And it starts with just learning to listen to your body's natural cues and rhythms. So if you, in the example you gave, have maybe experienced trauma in the past and have maybe been a bit disconnected or dissociated from your body as a result, first beginning by tuning into, like, do you listen to your body's hunger and fullness cues? Do you go to the bathroom when you have to go to the bathroom? Or do you find yourself holding it all day and ignoring what your body needs? Do you let yourself go to sleep when you're tired? first just identifying, like, am I in tune with those very natural rhythms and messages my body sends on a daily basis? And if not, let me just start by listening to those. Can I notice when I've been sitting all day and I feel like I'm in pain, or do I just power through and ignore that? And that will set you up to be able to have a little bit more of a relationship then going into somatic work, where you can listen to the more subtle sensations and nuances of how emotion shows up in the body and how your nervous system reacts to some of what we're talking about here. So I know it sounds very basic, but that's actually a place where I have a lot of people begin.
No, that's perfect place to begin, because I think someone might, I mean, we do just blow through days sometimes, and we have more schedules to remember than my hunger cues, you know, mm-hmm. like I didn't have time for lunch, you know, like those, that happens. So being able to just start to tap in is such a good baseline for someone to remember. And, you know, I want to touch on your book again real quick before we wrap, about Choose Yourself. And what if someone is like, but I don't want to be single? And how do you start to lean in and say, okay, maybe this is something I should read and I should like dig into? Like, how do we get past that point of to acceptance rather than, but resistance?
Yeah. The first thing I'll say is that the tools and practices in the book are for anybody. I've had people who are married read it. I've had guys read it. I've had women read it. And there's, you know, value for all of us in building a stronger relationship with ourselves. That's something we all need, regardless of relationship status. And if you're that person who has that resistance, like, I don't want to be single, I just want to jump into the next thing. Like, maybe I'm going through a breakup and I don't want to feel the pain of this rejection or this thing ending, and so I just want to go date again and distract myself, you're probably the person who then needs to spend some time single. If it's hard for you to spend time on your own, acknowledging that, again, there's going to be grief, there's going to be pain in that. And we don't have to be in the pain all the time. Like, it's okay to have some healthy distractions. It's also great to ask for help and support in navigating that pain, whether that's with a therapist or friend or somebody else. But just also to understand that you're not alone in feeling that way. I completely understand that resistance to being single. There can be this sense of like, then what if I miss out on meeting my person? What if I'm behind in, you know, the things that I want to experience in my life? And I just always come back to this place of being able to have that deep intrinsic trust in the timing of your life, and that you're never going to miss what is meant for you. And if anything, you might look back and on your life and wish, like, oh, I wish I had spent more time appreciating where I was at. I wish I had spent more time getting to know myself and what I wanted, rather than waking up in a relationship a few decades later and realizing I'm unfulfilled. Like, doing it now sets you up for being able to have the kind of lasting relationship that you want to have, because you take the time to get clear on what you really want and what your standards really are, and to gain the sense of strong sense of self-worth to be able to uphold those standards. That's what gets to happen in that time with yourself. And you realize that everything you were waiting for another person to give you, you can create for yourself. So when they do show up, they're just a bonus to amplify what you already have. They're not your sole sense of worth and validation in this world. And that is what's going to make you feel more secure in the relationship long term. So you don't have to say, I'm going to be single for 5 years. You can commit to 3 months. You can have it be like a short little experiment of just dating yourself for a little while, and then go back out there and see how different you feel.
The testament to that, when Jen and I met each other, zero intention in either of our minds of being in any sort of relationship, because we had committed to ourselves, kind of like you're talking about. And I feel like almost going into it with an indefinite attitude of just like, I'm just going to like focus on myself and work on myself. And exactly what you said, you will not miss out on that person if they run smack dab into you. Like, you will feel it. And by that point, you will have done the work to be able to trust yourself, to be able to trust that decision and that connection. And so I think that's so important. And Megan, thank you for coming on and sharing this. Thanks for the book, Choose Yourself. Where can people go to find that or to continue to learn more from you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You guys can find me on Instagram and my website. They're both my full name. So meganscherer.com, Megan Scherer on Instagram. And I've got my book linked on there so you can order it. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, wherever you buy books. And I post about all my upcoming retreats and programs and offerings on there, on my Instagram and email list as well.
Amazing. And I do know that you have something coming up, right?
Yeah,
with a summit.
Yes, I have a free summit that I host every year. It's called the Love Alignment Experience. It's a 5-day virtual summit where I bring in 10 different speakers who are experts in the realm of love, relationships, attachment, relationship with self. And we spend 10 sessions together over the course of 5 days, really diving deep into how to rewire your attachment patterns and build healthier relationship with self. And there's replays of available if you can't attend all the sessions live. And that is September 8th to the 12th this year. So yeah, you can go ahead and sign up for that and learn a lot more and do a deep dive into everything we've talked about here.
I mean, so incredibly valuable, especially the fact that you offer it for free with other people that, you know, we get to learn from. So thank you so much for the work that you do, for the way that you are vulnerable yourself in leading what's possible and the journey within yourself as well and showing other people. So I just appreciate who you are. You're so amazing and loving and compassionate and a leader in this space. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It was so great to chat with both of you.
Thanks so much for joining us for another interview on the Optimal Body Podcast, all about how those healthy relationships really start with a healthy relationship with yourself. Please consider passing this episode along and leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you haven't, come check out the Gen Health platform. You can search anything that you might be interested in, any type of exercise or pain point that you might be having for the free videos on our platform. And you can also get free self-assessments to go through and see where your restrictions are. And the first week of the Gen Health membership is always free. As a podcast listener, you can use code OPTIMAL to get your first full month for just $20. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.